May it please the court, my name is Barbara Sueda. I was a pro bono trial attorney for Pedro Flores Torres, the appellant, as well as the attorney for his two older brothers in successful requests for asylum because of their persecution in the Honduran military. I stand before you now agreeing to come here from Utah to argue this case because my client, like his brothers, is credible and merits asylum. Judge Cuevas found Pedro not credible by relying on impermissible speculation and conjecture, ignoring testimony and the evidence in the record. Judge Cuevas also applied the wrong legal standards for asylum. Our claim is based on past persecution, and he uses the standard for future persecution. I have 5 points to make, Your Honors. First, the IJ holds Pedro not credible because his affidavit is not as complete as his testimony at trial. But we contend that his affidavit and his testimony are not inconsistent and that he offers a legitimate, reasonable explanation for why his testimony is more thorough at trial. The persecution he suffered in the military was horrific and traumatizing and thus initially very difficult for him to talk about. When he first came to my office at Notre Dame, Pedro was a 23-year-old man with only 6 years of schooling, no English, being pushed by his sister to talk to me. As you know, asylum applications have to be filed within that 1 year of entering the United States. Pedro had 2 weeks left in his 1 year, and he was reluctant to talk about the humiliation he suffered with the military in front of his sister, who was his translator, and in front of another woman, myself. He could only give us the barest of details without crying, and we'd submitted a simple affidavit so as not to miss the one-year deadline. 2 years later, Pedro was able to testify more fully about the torture. The judge, however, calls it embellishing his claim. It's not embellishing, but rather with the passage of time, he's finally able to talk about the traumatizing, dehumanizing treatment he suffered with the military. Again, his trial testimony is not inconsistent and is with his affidavit just more complete. The second point I'd like to make is that the judge finds Pedro not credible because his testimony as to his reasons for presenting himself to the military. We submitted documentary evidence that on paper the Honduran military is a voluntary military. However, when it's low on recruits, NGOs confirm that it goes on a manhunt to fill its ranks. Pedro testifies over and over that he received a demand letter telling him he had to report to the military, and he did so because he didn't want the military coming after him, beating him up in front of his mother. He testified that even though he knew the military was supposed to be voluntary, he believed he had no real choice except to report or to be taken. As you know, the INA requires that an asylee suffer persecution or have a well-founded fear of future persecution. That future persecution includes a subjective and objective fear because of one of the 5 enumerated grounds. The IJ spends a lot of time questioning Pedro as to what he knew about his brother's treatment in the military. It's the judge's opinion that Pedro knew or should have known what happened to his brothers, and that because he didn't flee to the United States but presented himself to the military, that he has no subjective fear of persecution and therefore is not deserving of asylum. But Pedro's knowledge of his brother's suffering is irrelevant because his claim is based on his own actual persecution and not on a fear of future persecution. So the judge misapplies the law in this instance. My third point is...
He does have a well-grounded fear of future persecution.
He does, Your Honor. He does. But all he was required initially to prove is past persecution, which...
I understand.
Okay, I know. The IJ concludes... The third point I'd like to make is that the IJ concludes that the record establishes that Pedro was not able to perform his exercises and responsibilities as a recruit to the satisfaction of his superiors. The judge characterizes what Pedro underwent in the military as rigorous physical military training, trying to compare Pedro's experiences to basic training in the U.S. Army. This, too, is conjecture and speculation and doesn't take into account Pedro's actual testimony. In fact, The evidence and the record directly contradict the IJ's conclusions. Pedro's testimony over and over again is that he was able to perform his duties and he wasn't being punished because he couldn't do the work. He testifies 10 times during his trial that he was told by Colonel Martinez that he was going to pay for his brother's desertion of the military, that he was going to pay for his brother's making fun of the military.
Well, the immigration judge was skeptical that that Colonel Martinez or anybody would actually connect your client to his brothers, since they had deserted from the Navy and were based somewhere else.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, there were five boys in this family, and all of them had been injured by the military and had fled. And also, there is the case of Gerardo, his third brother, who had been in the military for 8 years and had walked through a minefield and was blown up and listed as deserting when they couldn't find his body on the minefield. It's very possible, rather than as the judge assumes, that there is that it is well known, the stories of the five Flores boys who fled the military. And we also have the very words of Colonel Martinez over and over again.
Because your client didn't desert, right?
He actually did, Your Honor. His third attempt at leaving the military after having been there for 17 months, he did leave.
He did, right.
He went to his mother's house, stayed there for about an hour, and left.
So the four brothers, had they all deserted?
The oldest brother was allowed out of the military because there were already two brothers in the military. His brother Gerardo requested, but he had already been injured, Your Honor.
So the other three brothers were all deserters?
Yes, they were, Your Honor. Yes, they were. So
your argument is this is kind of a notorious family in Honduran military circles. Is that the idea?
Yes, Your Honor.
How large are the Honduran armed forces? Do you have any idea?
I really don't have numbers for that, Your Honor. However, Pedro's brother does testify that that there is a central system for keeping names of people so that they would know that there were other brothers and that they were deserters. I believe that the judge also uses his experience in the U.S. Army incorrectly, and the appellant testifies to the IJ that it was always hard for him and not basic training like the IJ would like us all to believe. Pedro testifies that he never got paid, he never got familial visits or home visits like other soldiers. He was made to do things other soldiers weren't made to do. He was tortured, including waterboarding, mock executions, being entombed in his own excrement for 40 days, being starved, and then being made to run nude in front of his battalion past exhaustion. And it's really fortunate that our government and human rights groups have already labeled such treatment persecution rather than the rigorous military training this judge would have us think it was. And so what really happened to Pedro was nothing less than persecution, and this IJ has neglected this specific legal standard for asylum and ignores courts and human rights groups' careful definition of what should constitute persecution. The other point that the judge has problems with is the nexus, and I think you referred to that, Your Honor, where he refuses to consider the appellate's testimony. This judge speculates that the nexus can't be because of the brothers' desertion since there's 10 years, no war, two of the brothers were in the Navy, and the Honduran has 7 million people. But the fact remains, each time Pedro was singled out for torture, he was told he was going to pay for his brother's desertion, and he was being persecuted because of his social group. All Pedro can offer for motive by Colonel Martinez or for nexus are the very words of Colonel Martinez, and this is all Elias Zacharias requires, is the very words of the persecutor to determine the nexus. My last point is that the IJ's conduct violates my due process or my client's due process rights and prejudices his case. The government contends I didn't raise this issue before the BIA, but in fact I did in my brief because I tried to explain why this case should not go back to this same IJ. In questioning the asylum applicant, the IJ's conduct can't demonstrate impatience, hostility, or predisposition against the applicant's claim. The IJ's questioning of Pedro at times was very derisive and condescending, and I refer specifically to the IJ's questioning him about running nude in front of his battalion when he asks my client, since it's 90 degrees in Honduras, wouldn't you be more comfortable running nude? Rather than considering the testimony and evidence offered, the IJ's impatience and predisposition, I think, explain why he can't find the nexus or why he won't or mischaracterizes what Pedro suffered as persecution.
Okay, thank you, Ms.
Counsel.
Sorry.
Just a clarification. In the government's brief, they say he currently resides in Elcard.
Well, being from Indiana, you know that's probably Elkhart. I know I had to stop for a minute and think. I don't recall a town like that. But, yes, I think that was a mistake. He lives near Goshen in Elkhart. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Sueda. Ms. Strasik?
May it please the Court, Christina Strasik on behalf of the Attorney General. As you heard from Petitioner's Counsel, Petitioner sought asylum because he claimed that he suffered abuse in the military.
Good question. Looking through the transcript, why are the immigration judges so inquisitorial? There is a lawyer from the Department of Homeland Security, isn't there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, why doesn't the judge leave the questioning of witnesses to the two lawyers? Why does he ask so many questions?
Your Honor, I do not know why.
That's not how our district judges operate. Why do immigration judges operate that way?
Obviously, I was not at the hearing.
They're terribly overworked. Why do they increase their workloads by taking up so much of the time asking questions?
I don't know why he asked so many questions. However, I would assume that
it's awfully naive for someone to be extrapolating from basic training in the American Army to basic training in third world armies.
Based upon my interpretation of the immigration judge's decision, substantial evidence compels the conclusion.
That's not the answer to my question. Is it proper for an immigration judge to be saying, well, you know, I'm an American, I've been in the Army, I've done this, I've done that, I've dealt with police, you know, I have a driver's license, all this, and saying, you're from this third world country, it's had a civil war, and so on and so forth. But I think, you know, probably everything's just the same as it is in the United States, you know?
Although
basic training is rough in the American Army, it must be same thing in the Honduran Army. So what are you complaining about?
It's true that
really unprofessional?
It may be true that the immigration judge should not have interjected his opinion. However, based upon my analysis of his decision, it's clear that he took into account the full record when he made his conclusion that petitioner...
Does the full record include his recollections of basic training in the American Army? Is that part of the record?
It's not part of the record, however, it's clear...
Part of his mentality, though.
It's clear that he also took into account the record evidence when he came to the conclusion that petitioner did not testify credibly, and he also made a second independent conclusion that petitioner did not meet the nexus requirement. He did not show how the physical abuse that he suffered in the military had a nexus to one of the statutorily protected grounds in the INA. For example,
his argument, for which there's some evidence, is that his family has been singled out by the Honduran military for persecution.
It's true that he says that his brothers deserted the army, and that is why he was physically abused. However, I would like to draw your attention to the fact that petitioner conceded that neither the guard who attacked him nor the six soldiers with whom he fought had any idea that his brothers had deserted.
I know, but you know, he's this Colonel Martinez, he says, you know, was pulling a trigger of a, you know, unloaded pistol at his head. Pretty disturbing kind of experience to have. So
that was omitted from his asylum application that first came up in the merits hearing before the immigration judge. And I did hear that petitioner's counsel said that it could have been very traumatizing for him to relay this information to his attorney beforehand. However, the immigration judge's adverse credibility determination is not merely based on omissions. It is also based upon internal inconsistencies between the between petitioner's testimony throughout his hearing, also between inconsistencies between petitioner's testimony and his brother's testimony, and also between his testimony and documentary evidence that he submitted. I'd like to bring two examples out. First, with regard to the water barrel abuse that he first brought up in his testimony, that was omitted from his asylum application. The immigration judge says that he mentioned it once prior in his asylum application. However, he said that this happened upwards of 80 times in his testimony.
Was that a suggestion planted by the immigration judge?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of that.
He kept pushing Torres for a number. Didn't he keep pushing him for a number? Did he suggest a number?
I don't believe he suggested a number. However,
he was pushing for a number, wasn't he?
The water barrel incident came up throughout his testimony.
What you're having in these proceedings is you have two lawyers for the government, one for the alien. You have the DHS lawyer, and then you have the judge who cross-examines the alien.
Yes, Your Honor.
He's a foreigner. You know, it must be pretty disorienting to be cross-examined not only by the government's lawyer but by the supposedly impartial judge.
It's true. Setting aside the adverse credibility determination, if we assume that he was credible and that these two examples of inconsistencies are not at issue, then the judge did make an independent finding that he did not meet the nexus requirement. Even assuming he was credible, he didn't show...
I understand. If he was credible about Colonel Martinez telling him, you know, we're getting you because of your brothers, then why don't you have social group discrimination? You have a family that's regarded as a bunch of deserters, for which there would be perfectly lawful punishment, certainly, but apparently they don't punish these deserters by formal means. Instead, they, you know, subject them to various types of frightening and behavior. So I don't understand why that's an issue. If you believe him, why doesn't that dissolve that issue?
The only evidence that we have of Colonel Martinez is petitioner's testimony.
Well, yeah, but you say if he's credible, that is, if we believe the petitioner, then he said outright, Martinez told me, this is why I'm doing this to you. So what's the problem now?
I would say that one example does not present substantial evidence.
I disagree with you. I mean, if a colonel says to you, this is what we're doing to you, and if you believe the petitioner's statement that this is what was said to him, why isn't that perfectly compelling evidence that the military has singled out his family for persecution? What more would you want?
Your Honor, it could be, if we do find his testimony credible and we see that Colonel Martinez did in fact make this threat, this example, the immigration judge did not make a finding as to whether this constituted persecution or not. That would be a question for the Attorney General, because the immigration judge did not conclude whether this incident constituted persecution. He only concluded that there was no nexus to a statutorily protected ground. I would just like to reiterate that, again, the immigration judge found on two independent conclusions. One, that petitioner did not testify credibly due to the two examples that I had mentioned. One, the water barrel abuse, and also whether Colonel Martinez put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger, because these incidents were omitted from his application and were first mentioned in his testimony. And secondly, the immigration judge found that petitioner did not establish a nexus between the physical abuse that he suffered and a statutorily protected ground.
Was he asked at the hearing why a particular allegation wasn't in the affidavit?
Yes, he was questioned as to his inconsistencies.
What did he say?
He gave three explanations. One, he said, as petitioner's counsel already mentioned, that he found the events to be very traumatizing and troublesome, and therefore he held back from admitting some of that information. Second, he also testified that he remained afraid of Colonel Martinez and that he was scared that he could do something to him if he mentioned his name, and that's why he said he did not mention Colonel Martinez's name. And third, he also said that he just found that the incidents that occurred were humiliating and he didn't want to bring them up to his attorney.
And did the immigration judge say he didn't believe him?
The immigration judge said that these explanations were insufficient to rehabilitate.
By insufficient? What does that mean?
I believe that the immigration judge took into account the fact that there were inconsistencies in his testimony.
Yeah, I'm asking you what you mean by insufficient.
Insufficient meaning that the immigration judge still had doubts following these explanations that he gave.
Do you think he's lied?
The immigration judge doubted his testimony, yes.
Pardon?
The immigration judge doubted his testimony, yes.
Why do you use such euphemisms as doubted his testimony? Why didn't you say the immigration judge found that these excuses he gave for his omissions from his affidavit were lies? Is that what you claim the immigration judge said in effect?
Yes. Your Honors, I see that my time is up. May I briefly conclude?
No, we know what your conclusion is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rasek. Ms. Sueda? Time expired? Well, we'll give you 1 minute.
I would just like to reiterate that none of his testimony was inconsistent. It just wasn't as complete as it was before. I would ask, Your Honor, this is the same judge that we had before you in the Awasi case, and I would ask that in this case you be, if you should find the petitioner merits asylum and that the judge did apply the wrong legal standard, that you refer it to another immigration judge and not this same judge. And I would ask, if possible, that it be sent to the court in Salt Lake City where I currently practice pro bono. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, thank you very much to both of you.